The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Thank you for the good times. Thank you for your love. Thank you for the joy you've given me. Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, a program designed to promote a positive work environment. Your hosts are Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. In this hour, you will be motivated to motivate, increase morale, productivity, loyalty, and reduce turnover. Learn how some companies get it while others don't. Now, here are your hosts, Roy and Max.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, the show that's all about creating a better workplace and developing positive relationships where people can thrive. This is Roy Saunderson, along with my colleague, Max Brown.
Hello there.
And we're from the Recognition Management Institute. Our guest today is Jim Kouzes. You may know that Jim Kouzes is one of the 12 best executive educators in the United States and co-author with Barry Posner of the award-winning and best-selling book, The Leadership Challenge. And it's reported, and I can't believe it, it's over 1.8 million copies now in print. And Jim and Barry have also obviously co-authored a lot of other books as well and publications, and a lot of research in the area of leadership. Jim is also the Dean's Executive Professor of Leadership at the Levy School of Business at Santa Clara University. And throughout his career, Jim has received numerous awards, including the 2009 Distinguished Contributions of the Workplace Learning and Performance Award, and many other wonderful awards. Jim, as we've thought about you, we couldn't help but also remember your book, Encouraging the Heart. That's what drew us to invite you on the show. Welcome to our show, Jim.
Well, thank you very much, Roy. I really appreciate this opportunity, and it's also nice to be here with Max.
Well, okay. I'm delighted. Thank you so much for being here with us.
My pleasure.
Jim, tell us just a little bit about how you became involved with even just the whole topic of leadership practices.
Roy, I think my own personal history with leadership goes back to when I was growing up in Washington, D.C., and my most memorable time that I connect with my lifelong interest in leadership and leadership development was when I was a young lad of 15 and stood in John F. Kennedy's honor guard as an Eagle Scout.
Wow.
Cemented in my memory as that seminal event, and I've always wanted to be involved as a very young boy in something having to do with the whole field of human services, if you will, human resources, mm-hmm. and it's always fascinated me. So I have been involved with that for a long, long time. But my research and more serious academic interest in leadership began when I met Barry Posner at Santa Clara University in 1981. Mm-hmm. He and I connected on initially a paper having to do with corporate culture and shared values make a difference, and we soon began to explore a common interest in leadership behavior, and that led us to our first book, The Leadership Challenge, in 1987.
Wonderful, wonderful. So certainly have a motivational start and an academic finish with motivation woven in between, I'm sure.
Lots of wonderful journeys along the way.
Yes, yes. Now, in your research on personal best leadership, I know you found that one of the five practices of exemplary leaders is this term, encouraging the heart. How did you discover this, and what exactly does it mean?
Well, encouraging the heart is one of the five practices of exemplary leadership, as you mentioned, and that came out of the research that we did for the Leadership Challenge. Barry and I asked one fundamental question about what leaders do when they are performing at their best. We collected cases from people about what they did when they felt they were doing their Olympic-level performance as a leader. And through the collection of those cases, initially we collected about 500 and later did in-depth interviews and then created an instrument to measure this. But the research methodology we used was asking people to describe their personal best leadership experiences. And one of the things we learned when people were doing their best as a leader, that among other things that they did, there was always an element of what we now term encouraging the heart, recognition for people who are performing at high levels, and also a lot of celebration of successes. So if you get an image in your mind of the kind of thing that goes on at the Olympics, because many of us, including myself, are watching the Olympics now, you see how much when somebody does something at a very high level, and they often call it their personal best.
Right.
The audience applauds, they tear up, their coaches slap them on the back, they do high fives. All of those things are just a human expression, a very natural human expression of what we do when we recognize, not only in ourselves, but other people recognize, that we're performing at very high levels. And so it was very evident from those cases that it was a common experience, and it became one of our five practices of exemplary leadership.
That's wonderful. Now, you bring up that kind of whole emotional connection as we consider the Olympics, and yet many leaders today, if they heard the word encourage the heart, or if they hear the word love, they seem to cringe. Are leaders' perceptions of these what might be called soft skills today different from when you first wrote The Leadership Challenge?
Well, I think that we have matured a bit, if you will, in our understanding of this. From a time when we began and even had some corporate clients who wanted us to change the name from heart to something a little harder that was perceived as so soft. And God forbid that we would use the term love in a conversation with a senior executive group in a seminar, because that was just taboo.
Yeah.
Today, emotional intelligence has become better understood. People are more aware of the role that positive emotions play in high levels of performance, and so those two words are a little bit more acceptable. I think probably heart more than love, but we don't get as much pushback. And the soft skill side, people are beginning to recognize the important role that the emotions play in people's performance, and the power that positive emotions have in achieving higher levels of performance.
Do you think maybe because some of the there's more research on the impact of positive emotions, positive feedback, that might have humanized some of these qualities more?
I think so. We're senior executives, as both of you know, Roy, are always asking for the evidence to support a particular assertion. So we're always looking for evidence. And it's important to be able to give them those case examples or stories, but also then to demonstrate in a quantitative sense that if people are more positive towards each other, if people give each other more encouragement, in fact, there are higher level outcomes than if they are more negative or neutral.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, Jim, this is Max. You talk about a couple different myths in the book, Encouraging the Heart. If I could read from it from just a moment, one of the myths you talk about is this myth of the leader has to be this rugged individualism, you know, that they do it all on their own, they get it all done on their own. And the fact is, as you say, we don't do our best in isolation. And then the second part of that is that there's this myth that leaders ought to be cool and aloof and analytical, that they ought to separate their emotion from the work. We're told that real leaders don't need love and affection and friendship. And then you went on to say, it's not a popularity contest, as a phrase that you often heard it in these workplaces. If people, you know, I don't care if people like me, I just want them to respect me, the leaders would say. And your response to that was nonsense.
Yeah, right.
Nonsense. I just love that. Could you go into that a bit further?
Well, absolutely. I'm getting a little bit more outspoken, even in my older years. it is nonsense. And if we all think about it, we can see that in fact it is a myth about leadership. First of all, in every single case that we gathered on personal best leadership, there was not one leader who said, "I did this by myself." And even in individual activities, let's say sports, well, our son is a tennis player, and he's plays number one at UC Davis, and he's in his junior year in college. He didn't get to be that player by himself. Certainly, he is the one out there on the tennis court day in and day out practicing and performing, but he didn't get there without the help of his parents, especially his mother. He didn't get there without coaches. He didn't get there without other people. No one ever gets to a very high level of performance without other people.
Right.
You cannot do it alone.
Yeah.
And so in recognizing that leaders are not solo performers who are out there on their own but need a team of people, then it begs the question, what does that team need in order to be a reach a high level of performance? And one of the important elements of that, of course, is that they need encouragement, they need trust, they need collaboration. And so as we begin to get people to think a little bit more in depth about this, they recognize that teamwork, collaboration, cooperation is an important piece of this. Relationships are an important piece, and that there needs to be a focus on the positive side of relationships.
Right.
With regard to the notion of it's not a popularity contest, people say, and, you know, I don't care if you like me, I just want you to respect me. Who are these people that they don't want to like them? Is it their, spouse? Is it their friends? Would they have any if they weren't a likable person? Is it their children? Is it their people at work? Who is it that they're talking about? We come up with these phrases in business and we toss them off as if they're the truth. But in fact, what the data says is if people don't like their leader, they aren't going to perform at higher levels.
No.
In fact, leaders should want to be liked, not that, we're going to take a vote every time somebody acts and decide whether, take a poll. Are you, or this week, are you more likable than last week? But in our minds, we do take polls. We decide, well, is this person someone that I want to put out for, I want to perform at my highest levels for?
Mm-hmm.
And in that sense, it is a popularity contest. And it's certainly not an unpopularity contest.
Right? Yes. Now, I know in your book you also indicate that it's a managerial myth to think that we can't be friends, right? And I think that's what you were just alluding to in your last comment there.
Absolutely. And Gallup, in their research, finds that one of the 12 factors that explain engagement, and one of them is has a friend at work.
Yeah.
And one of those friends at work can, in fact, be the manager. And I can tell you that I've had many friends at work who were either my manager or, because I served as chief executive officer and chairman of the board of a private consulting company, I hope that a lot of people considered me their friend.
Mm-hmm. That's so very, very important. And Jim, we're going to take a short break at this time. And so this is Roy Saunderson and Max Brown with our guest today, Jim Kouzes. And you're listening to Real Recognition Radio on the Voice America Business Channel. Please stay tuned.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and Max Brown. And our guest today is Jim Kouzos, the author of Encouraging the Heart and so many other wonderful books. In fact, Jim, we know you have another book coming up very, very soon. But before we get into the latest one, we'll let listeners hold on for just a moment. We'll come back to Encouraging the Heart for just a moment. Inside there, you write about the seven essentials of encouraging. And could you briefly describe for us what each of those are?
Thank you, Max. Yes, absolutely. The first of the seven essentials that emerge from the research that we've done on encouraging the heart is set high standards or set clear standards. Setting clear standards is important because if you're going to recognize someone for some accomplishment or some contribution that they make, then there has to be a standard against which that recognition is made. So the first of those is to make sure that you're clear about the standards. The second is to expect the best. This is the old Pygmalion story about Pygmalion, My Fair Lady.
Right.
The story where people have high expectations of others, and when they have high expectations, people tend to perform to those higher expectations. So you set clear standards, but then you don't say, well, it's so high that you really can't achieve it. You say, we have this high standard, and it's my belief and my expectation that everyone will achieve that. Mm-hmm. You communicate that in a variety of ways. Then you pay attention. Paying attention enables you to find, it's sort of the old managing by wandering around notion, and if you do that, you're able to see people doing things that are in line with those high standards. And the fourth of the seven is you personalize recognition. We need to personalize recognition because no one likes to get that same gold watch or same trophy that everyone else gets. It needs to be something special, and personalizing allows you the opportunity to understand that each and every one of us responds differently. Some people like public recognition. Some people would prefer to have it in a smaller group. Mm-hmm. Other people would prefer maybe a little time with their family compared to somebody who might need a little bit of extra incentive in a monetary sense. So personalizing recognition is the fourth. The fifth is telling the story. In order to communicate effectively why it is that this recognition was given to this particular person, we need to give a little background and tell the history. Story is short for history, so give the history of this and communicate. And then stories provide another important lesson for leaders in that they enable leaders to communicate to other people why this person was recognized and make it more memorable. And the fourth of these is to celebrate together. It's really important because And again, going back to the Olympics, if someone performed in did something terrific and was a gold medal winning performance and nobody applauded, or you performed to an empty stadium, it wouldn't have the same meaning and significance. So celebrating together builds community and also gets those emotions to become more infectious. And the last is setting the example. As a leader, you need to make sure that you go out there and reward and recognize. It's not something that you delegate to others.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And obviously, when I'm guessing listeners listening to this now, thinking about these seven steps, obviously this requires some work. This is going to take a conscious effort for people to do this.
Yes, it is. There's nothing about leadership that's really easy. It is hard work, and this is another component of it that it requires a lot of effort on the leader's part to do these things. Just thinking about the whole notion of, you mean I just can't go to a binder and say, well, this is the recognition of the week, and I give that out to people? You mean I have to personalize it? I have to think about this individual? And yeah, you do, because if you don't, it can actually have more of a negative impact than a positive impact. So
you know, each. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry, Jim. You saying that actually just led me to an experience I just read recently. You know, Roy and I, we experience this with clients all the time. And on Twitter, there is a gentleman who recently just shared his frustration with his company for giving him an iPod as recognition, which typically would be very nice. But this particular gentleman is deaf.
Oh.
And he's ranting about it online. He's obviously very upset because they didn't realize that this isn't appropriate for him, you know? So like you said, it could have the opposite effect.
That's a great story. And I have, you know, we tell several similar kinds of things where people were given what I'm sure the person who thought they were giving the recognition felt was a nice gesture, but in fact it had a negative impact on them. And
it's
just another illustration. That you mean, and the person says, "You mean you don't?" To themselves, and the reason they rant is, "You mean you didn't know that I couldn't hear?"
Yeah,
and you didn't know that much. Yet you're giving me a recognition. It's an insult.
It's a disconnect.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Just
it's
such
it's
a disconnect.
The language that I do or I do not know who you are. Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So what would you suggest then for people that need to know how to personalize this for people, but don't have a lot of time on their hands?
Well, one of the easiest ways, if you're in an office environment, for example, is you can walk around the office and just you peek in somebody's cubicle and you notice there's a picture of their family on their desk, or you notice that they have a baseball glove, or they have some object that tells you what this person's interests are. And you begin to get a little bit better sense of them as individuals. There are, of course, opportunities for spending some time in conversation with people rather than make your meetings just about the business of the day. Have people just ask a question. Tell me about a time when, in the past when you've done something really well and got recognized, tell me about your most meaningful recognition experience. We can have conversations that give us clues about that. So I think there are a number of techniques when you're engaging in conversation or observation with other people about their likes and dislikes, preferences, that enable you to get better acquainted with the person.
Yeah. I love that. And it doesn't, so it's just, it's really about paying attention.
Absolutely.
You have to be intentional about it. So this giving recognition, though, it does get very personal, it seems. And you and I both know that in order for it to be authentic, it should be personal, you know, and to personalize it, as you suggested earlier as well. So what would you suggest to a leader who feels like this is too vulnerable, you know, they don't want to express appreciation, it sounds a little bit soft, a little bit too vulnerable for him. It's scary.
Get over it would be my...
I love it.
Welcome to leadership, right?
Yeah, welcome to leadership. Exactly.
I love it. You know, it's amazing how many times I'll go to an audience and ask them, you know, what's your biggest objection to recognition? And they'll have myriads of reasons why they can't do it. And I'll say, isn't it interesting how we'll all come up with these ways and reasons to keep us in our own comfort zone?
If that kind of thing makes you feel vulnerable, then we need to help people, obviously, to work on it. I was a bit glib in my response, but I do understand that people, and in some cultures as well, there are people who feel more vulnerable or embarrassed if it's this kind of thing. We have to be sensitive to that. But on the other hand, we have to remember that leadership is a relationship, and it is about encouraging others, recognizing others, celebrating together. It's all about relationship skills. And so if that is the issue that somebody is experiencing personally in expressing recognition, then I would probably work with them as a coach to find some ways in which they can take little steps to move in that direction. And it has to do really with making them feel more comfortable in public talking about things that are emotional. This sounds like an opportunity for someone to sit down with a coach and get some help in doing that in some little ways, maybe one-on-one, maybe in a small group with a group of people they feel comfortable with, mm-hmm. talking about this kind of thing as a start, and then gradually move to doing things in larger groups.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The point, obviously, is that they need to do something about it. They can't just avoid it.
Yeah, it is part of the job. It goes with the territory. And if you want to be a leader, encouraging the heart is one of the essential practices. And if you don't do it, people will perform at lower levels. And what is your job anyway? Is your job to increase performance, keep it the same, or lower performance? And any manager I've ever asked has always said, my job is to increase performance. Mm-hmm. Well, then if your job is to increase performance, one of the ways in which you increase performance is that you encourage other people. Yeah. And being a bit more personal about that recognition is an important ingredient in doing that.
I was doing a presentation in China where someone actually said, from a cultural standpoint, we just don't do this. And I said, really? Being a human is just not acceptable in China. The point, of course, was, that we all do need encouraging and validation. And I lived there for so long, I could play with my audience that way. But it was really fun to be able to help people understand that we'll come up with all sorts of reasons to not try to learn something new or to try to do something different. I think I really appreciate what you said there, that we just have to face it, that if we're trying to encourage performance, these are part of the skill sets we need to learn.
Yes, and having spent quite a bit of time myself in Asia, and including mm-hmm. China, and collecting data, I can assure you that the scores on our assessment instrument around encouraging the heart indicate that when those managers in China do more of encouraging the heart than less, they get higher levels of performance.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. It's amazing. It's a global reality. It's a global truth.
It's a global truth, absolutely.
Yeah, I love it. Hey, Jim, we're going to take another quick break real fast. But for our listeners there, please join us right back here with Jim. We'll continue to talk about leadership and the heart of sustainable recognition as well. You're listening to Real Recognition Radio, and we'll be right back.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about: getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio with myself, Roy Saunderson, and Max Brown, and our guest today, Jim Kouzes. Jim, this has been a wonderful and delightful discussion as we look at the whole leadership impact on giving real recognition. I'm curious, based on the last chapter in your book, Encouraging the Heart, which was entitled Finding Your Voice, what does it mean for a leader to find your voice? How can they do that?
One of the stories that we tell in that book comes from Max Dupree, who is the former chairman and CEO of Herman Miller. And Max tells this wonderfully moving story about his granddaughter named Zoe, who at the time he wrote the story was a newborn, but is now about 23, 4 years old, a young lady. And he writes about her because she was born premature, and she, in fact, weighed only 1 pound and 7 ounces. And when he went to the hospital to do what he could as a grandparent to help care for this obviously very sick child, he came across a nurse Ruth, and he went to her and told her he'd like to help, and she said, "Well, Max, what I'd like you to do every day is to come here and visit Zoe, and when you visit her in her isolate in the neonatal intensive care unit, I want you to rub her arms and her legs and her body with the tip of your finger. And as you caress her, I want you to tell her how much you love her, because she has to be able to connect your voice to your touch." Mm-hmm. Such a beautiful story. And Max says, you know, she was doing absolutely the right thing for Zoe and for me as a grandparent, but without realizing it, she was giving me one of the best possible lessons for the work of a leader. To become a leader, he said, one need always connect one's voice to one's touch. But then he went on to say, there is, however, a prior task, finding one's voice in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
I love that story, and it really brings home in a very, very moving way the importance of connecting what we say with what we do.
Yes.
And we cannot make that connection in an authentic and genuine way unless we are clear about what's important to us, what we value, and what we believe in. And finding your voice is really just about that. It is about finding, discovering, uncovering, revealing what it is that's most important to you in life, what you stand for, what you believe in, what you value, so that you can authentically connect what you say with what you do.
Right.
And that there is an integrity to it. Integrity essentially meaning whole or one. There's a oneness to who you are, and that oneness comes when you're doing it out of what's important, not because it's a cookbook prescription you read in some management book.
Right. Now, you've just used a very powerful story there to answer my question, and you also speak of an essential need to tell stories. And if we were to tell the story of recognition, why do you think stories resonate so well in organizations?
We are, I guess storytelling goes back to sitting around the campfire and recalling what happened during the day, and then when the young come along, we regale them with all the stories around the campfire about how we need to go out into the tundra and, you know, bring back the game, and you know, all of the ancient history that it has. Inside modern organizations, it's really sometimes referred to as a case study or an example.
Yes.
And, you know, it is, well, I understand that principle that you're trying to articulate, that value or that standard, but can you give me an example of what that means or someone who's done that? And then once we do that, people say, oh, yeah, I understand now. I saw Kelly do that, and when Kelly did that, that's something I think I could do.
Mm-hmm.
So stories play the role of passing along critical lessons, critical values, and then giving people an illustration of what that means in practice.
Right. Now, but at the same time, most leaders don't consider themselves storytellers, so how can they become better encouragers, as you're espousing, through the medium of story?
Well, if I want to storytelling, not all of us consider ourselves to be the kind of storyteller, say, of a Mark Twain, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, if we all think back to our interactions with our best friends when we get together, say, for a dinner or we get together over a holiday, what are we doing? And what are you doing?
You know, sure, sharing different accounts, right?
You know, we're giving an account of what's been happening to us, and often the most engaging conversations are about come through story.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do engage in it quite naturally. We just don't think that it plays a role in organizations. And so we just need to remind ourselves that storytelling is simply giving people an example of what you're talking about, of a real person doing real things. It is not about telling fictional stories or make-believe stories. It is about giving a real-life example of somebody who has done something that is similar to what you're talking about.
Right. And when we're looking at encouraging the heart and real recognition, one of the issues that Max and I continue to experience as we go into many organizations is that managers will say to us, our leaders don't just get it. They don't get it. From your leadership research, I'm curious to know if you have some insights on how you help and facilitate leaders to get it about the importance of recognition and encouraging the heart.
We do a couple of things. The first of those is when we try to help people to develop their capacity in this area of encouraging the heart, one of the activities we begin with is we have people reflect on their most meaningful recognition. So what I would do if I were working with someone who felt that they didn't quite have the ability to do this, I would ask them to actually reflect back on their own experiences. Tell me about a time when you received your most meaningful recognition. Mm-hmm. And I do it in a group because it's important to hear other people tell their stories so you can see some common themes that come out of it. And when people reflect on their most meaningful recognition, a time when someone could have been a manager, could have been a peer, could have been something from the outside, recognize them in a way that has remained with them for many years in some cases.
Yes.
People begin to recount most of these seven essentials we've been talking about. And in particular, the one around personalizing.
Yeah.
And what are they doing when they are recounting this recognition experience? They're telling a story.
Story, yeah.
And they begin to understand that it's not such a strange experience after all. That storytelling is actually what all of them are engaged in when they're recalling a meaningful recognition, and they begin to understand that standards play a role in this. That it wasn't just out of the blue.
Right.
It was something they were being recognized for.
Mm-hmm.
They recognize that it was often done in a group of people. It was done publicly, and that they were celebrating, not just a one-on-one experience. So these things begin to become apparent as they do this. So that's how we approach this initially.
Gotcha.
Is to get people to recall their most meaningful recognition.
So that's a pretty powerful exercise for them.
Yeah, it's a great exercise.
Yeah. Now, I was intrigued. There's one part of your book, Encouraging the Heart, that I was intrigued by. It was a study you referred to where leaders, when they were asked, do you need encouragement, it was only like 60% positive. But when you asked those same leaders if they received encouragement, would they perform at a higher level, 98% in this case responded affirmatively. How do you explain the contrast between those percentage levels?
When it's really fun to do that, and I actually do it in groups now. Still to this day, I'll ask people, "Well, tell me how many of you need recognition to perform at your best?" And
mm-hmm.
We get varies the percentage of hands that go up. Sometimes it's 50-60%. Sometimes it's even less.
Right.
And then I'll say, okay, so that looks like 50-60% of you. How many of you, when you've gotten recognition, have found it improves your performance. It's helpful to you. You
get 98-100%
will raise their hand. And I say, so it looks like, you know, 50% of you are in denial. That if it helps you perform at a higher level, then you need it.
You do need it.
And so, again, it goes back to that fundamental question. What is the job of a leader anyway?
Yeah.
Is it to improve performance, keep it the same, or lower performance? And if it's to improve performance, and you all say that it helped you, then you need to do it. And you need to do it for yourself, and you need to do it for others. So I think we deny that we need it because we have this image that we should be self-sufficient, that we don't really need other people to help us perform at a higher level. It's this rugged individualism. Well, I can do it by myself. You know, I'm competent and I'm experienced. And well, that may be true, but can you do it better if you get somebody cheering you along? You know, we have to ask ourselves, would I be performing at this level if nobody were watching? Well, maybe I think I would. But in fact, what we find is that the crowd noise, the applause on the sidelines, the people, you know, your coach, you know, encouraging you, all of those things help us to reach deep inside and pull out just a little bit more from ourselves.
Wow, so true. Jim, I think you're giving us the depth behind what leadership should be, and we really appreciate your comments along the way. It looks like we're due for a short intermission, so come back for our final segment with our guest today, Jim Kouzes. For Real Recognition Radio, this is Roy Saunderson and Max Brown reminding you to keep it real.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now. Toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
Voice America Business Network. The bottom line in business.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about: getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio. Let's continue our conversation now with Jim Kouzes, our guest today, and learn some final pointers on leadership, the heart of sustainable recognition. It's been just a fantastic conversation so far, Jim. We regret that we only have one segment, just a few minutes left with you, but before we close, we want to make sure that we learn a little bit more about some of your latest research, and I understand that you're currently doing a new book called The Truth About Leadership. Can you tell us a little bit about that book and what you're doing there?
Well, thank you. Thank you for bringing that up. I'd love to talk about it. Great. Yes, Barry and I just finished a manuscript for The Truth About Leadership. It's a book of reflections on enduring lessons from the last 30 years of research. When we first began the book, we initially were going to write to millennials or the emerging generation of leaders, but we found that when we talked in depth with them, that the questions that they had about leadership were not all that different, and they said, just tell us the truth. So we said, oh, the truth. What is that? And we began to reflect on, well, what's been true over the last 30 years of our research, and what do we expect to be true 30 years down the road when these emerging leaders are in the heart of their careers, and what is it that we would tell them today so that 30 years from now they hopefully will be more effective. So we decided to review, and we came up with 10, not the only 10 things that we consider important, but we tried to isolate those that were most significant from both the quantitative side. They stood the test of time, but they also stood the test of statistics. Mm-hmm. And that's in essence what the book contains.
I love that. Is there anything that surprised you from the research?
Well, perhaps one of the most surprising things was how little things have changed over the last 30 years. While the context in which we work has certainly changed, we've certainly seen a lot of political changes, a global economy has increased market competition around the world. We've seen companies come and go. We've seen, you know, obviously, 9/11 and the rise of terrorism around the world. We've seen the changes in technology, and now we're on the 24/7 click away new technologies. We've seen more diversity in the workplace. We've seen a rise of a new generation. So in that sense, in the sense of a context, the times are continuously changing. But when we looked at the content of leadership, it hasn't changed all that much. There are some fundamentals that remain true regardless of the decade in which we are leading. And so that, while it's not totally surprising, is something that is important for people to remember, because we tend to grab onto a lot of fads in our culture. And leadership isn't faddish.
Wow. No. Well, and it's interesting that you say that unfortunately there's a lot of myth within the leadership genre, though, isn't there? I mean, we have to be careful that what we talk about and train and teach in our organizations actually is based on fact and has some proof to it as well.
Absolutely. That's one of the contributions Barry and I hope we make to the field, is that we hope we communicate things that people can do, prescriptions, activities that people can do to be better leaders and to tell good stories and give good examples of what leaders do when they're at their best. But as important as those things are, it's also equally important to us that we communicate that there is substance behind this, that there's data behind this, and that if you do these things, you'll be more effective. And that means sometimes we have to toss out some of the myths that exist. But we believe very much that it has to be not only useful information, but valid information.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, and so one of those truths that you talk about is in the new book, and you titled that chapter, Leadership is an Affair of the Heart. Could you give us just a glimpse of what that's like? What that's about?
Well, I'm thinking about these most recent athletes who are performing. It's hard to when the Olympics are on TV every day, and you know you hear comments like, "Well, she had a lot of heart to be able to skate under those conditions," or you know that person really had a lot of heart to overcome those obstacles in his life, or. Outside of that, in sports, you hear that kind of phrase a lot, and we hear that about people who have done courageous things. But it's just striking, isn't it, how infrequently you hear people say, "Well, that manager had a lot of heart," and yet, at the underlying all of this there's a comment that was made to us by a colleague of ours. Erwin Fetterman, who said, "You know, you don't love someone because of who they are. You love them because of how they make you feel." And this axiom applies equally, he said, in a company setting. Now, Erwin Fetterman is former chief executive officer of a high-tech company, and now a partner at a venture capital firm. And then he went on to say, it may seem inappropriate to to use words such as love and affection in relation to business. And that conventional wisdom has it that management's, you know, not a popularity contest. But he said, I contend, however, that all things being equal, we will work harder and more effectively for people we like, and we will like them in direct proportion to how they make us feel. And
right.
I think that's just a really powerful, powerful lesson.
Yes.
That our job is, in many respects as leaders, is an emotional one.
Yes.
We are trying to increase people's positive feelings about their work, positive feelings about their organization, positive feelings about other people they work with, and that when we do that, we know that they'll perform at higher levels. And Pete Thigpen, who was formerly with Levi Strauss & Company as the president of their U.S. operations and now senior fellow at the Aspen Institute, said to us, you know, you've got to really believe in your heart of hearts that your fundamental purpose, your reason for being, is to enlarge the lives of others.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that, your life will be enlarged also, and all of the things we have been taught to concentrate on will take care of themselves.
Oh, it's absolutely beautiful.
And if you have that kind of spirit with which you do your job as a leader, all other things will take care of themselves.
Yes. Yeah. It resonates. It's true. And Roy and I, you know, we try to preach this as well, and we believe in what you're saying, but I have myriads of examples, as we all do. You know, you can open any newspaper almost and see examples of people that haven't found their voice yet, or leaders that are draconian in nature and beating their people up, and perhaps not physically, but emotionally and verbally, and it's stressful. So what could we give or say to these people? And perhaps even more importantly, what do we say to those people who are trapped in an environment like that and don't know what to do?
Well, in one of our other books, A Leader's Legacy, we talk in another way about this issue. And one of the things that we say is that those kind of people should never be in a leadership role in the first place.
That's so yeah. true.
And if they are, and they can't understand the impact that that kind of behavior has on other people, then that they need to be moved into a job where they can make a contribution, or moved out. I go back to that fundamental question I've asked, I think, twice already, and I'm going to ask it again. What is the job of a leader? To improve performance, keep it the same, or make it worse?
Yeah.
If it's to improve performance, why do you want somebody in that job who diminishes performance? It doesn't make any rational sense. You know, if leaders are supposed to be at all rational, then that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
We have to not put people in that role who diminish performance. And if they do, they need to get the feedback, and then they need to be given some coaching on how they can improve. And if they cannot, then they don't belong in the job.
What would you say to those leaders then that, you know, they're getting paid hundreds of millions of dollars in golden parachute packages, and yet destroying the morale of the workplace, but they think that they're getting the numbers because they've cut costs and they're just numbers driven, and somehow shareholders are rewarding them for that?
There is a lot of that going on. You're absolutely right. And in the short term, it may be effective. So we have to step back and ask ourselves, in the long term, what's effective. That's why we wrote The Truth About Leadership. It's because we wanted people to take a longer-term perspective and to understand that these things have been true, such as that leadership is an affair of the heart, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and that the truth is that you can't do it alone.
Yes.
And the truth is that trust really rules the workplace. And so we have to help. You and I and others who are in this business have to help people understand that there are truths out there about human behavior that have stood the test of time and have stood the test of statistics, and that the kind of behavior that may be the myths about leadership just don't meet the standards. So I think part of our job, certainly Barry and I is part of ours, is to continue to persist in getting the word out. You know, self-centered managers can never achieve the kind of transformation that people who are center their the work that they do on others. You know, there are two people who look at their job as simply getting results, financial results, are not concerned about others. I assure you, will fail in the long term, and they won't just personally fail; they'll call it to cause other people to fail.
Jim, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on our show today.
It's my pleasure.
Well,
I hope we didn't end on a sour note here.
Well, no, I don't.
It's the reality.
Yeah, it is reality. I wish we had so much more time with you. We want to wish you the best of success with your latest book, and we want people to know how would they be able to reach out and contact you if they want to get more information. Do you have a URL or a place they would go?
Well, our website is www.leadershipchallenge.com, and that's the easiest way to see what we're up to, particularly around the books that we publish and some workshops and things, and also there's information about our research on the research tab, and there's information about how to contact us. That's the easiest one-stop shop.
Well, I appreciate that. It's been wonderful to have you on the show. Roy and I have truly enjoyed the time we've had with you today.
Well, thank you both very much. You are doing terrific work in this world. We all appreciate your work on Real Recognition, and thank you for the opportunity to share this positive message with others.
Thank you, Jim. Folks, tune in next time for our next show, where Roy and I are going to be meeting with author Michael Stallard as we explore the subject of connected culture for engaging recognition. Thanks again for listening to Real Recognition Radio. For more information on how you can reach us at the Recognition Management Institute, please visit us at www.realrecognition.com. Until next time, this is Max Brown and my colleague and co-host Roy Saunderson, and we're reminding you again, keep it real.
Thank you again for tuning in Real Recognition Radio. Please join Roy Saunderson and Max Brown again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel for more motivational tips to help your employees perform better. We'll talk again next week.